This week's Torah portion is called Sav. And it's from Leviticus 6:1 through 8:36. I actually had a difficult time getting started on this Torah portion because there's a distinct difference if you look at your King James Version Bible versus what, you know, the Hebrew Version Bibles are. And the distinct difference is in where it starts. You see, the King James Version of the Bible starts off talking about taking someone else's property or taking something that doesn't belong to you. And when you find out that you're guilty, what you're to do in that case. But when I looked at the Hebrew sources and Hebrew Bibles, it started off, the chapter 6:1, started off with the burnt offerings. So I found that curious. I Googled it to try to find out why is there a difference? I couldn't find out. So if you guys go, when you go back and Google it and you figure it out, please let me know. I'd be curious. But because we go based on the Hebrew first, I started off with the burnt offerings. And so when you go into, I want to go into a quick summary of the chapters. And we'll start off here, chapter 6, with the burnt offerings. So again, these are going to be high level. And I chose to do a little bit different. Typically, when we have chapters like this, where there's a lot of details, I don't like to go into all the details up front. I try to find something to focus on. This time I decided there's so many details, it's worth it for us to go in and sort of look at. And I'm not going into intricate detail, but I am going into high-level detail. And it's for you to understand and know that there is even more in the Torah portion, so to go back and look at it. But I'm going to start off with the highlights. So chapter 6 starts off with the burnt offerings. Then it goes into the meal offerings, the sin offerings. Okay, and this highlight is going to sort of show us what we're going into. So each one of the following slides is going to go into each one of these. Then chapter 7 discusses the guilt offerings and the peace offerings. And then it details, you know, more specific details regarding the sacrifices. Chapter 8 talks about the ordination of Aaron and his sons, okay, and how they were anointed and all of the intricate rituals and details that go along with that. So, to start off, we're going to start with the burnt offerings, okay? So chapter 6 talks about the burnt offerings. Number one, they were kept on the hearth of the plate on top of the altar all night. So when the burnt offering was brought, it was put on the top of the altar, and it was burnt throughout the night. The priest had to put on special garments to take the ashes, and he would put them beside the altar. Okay, so this was one part of the ceremony was the priest had to put on special garments. Okay, it talks about the girdle and it talks about different specific garments for this part of the ritual. Okay, so the priest had to put on those garments, took the ashes, and the sole purpose of putting on those garments was so that he would take those ashes and put them beside the altar. Okay, the next portion, the priest would then take those garments, he would change them to other garments, and then take those ashes and take them outside of the camp to a clean place. It specifically talked about taking it to a clean place outside of the camp. So it was interesting in the fact that he had to, you know, for each specific thing, there was a specific ordinance that he was to do. And it involved changing the garments and then the ashes from one state to the other. So there was a transition there. The fire on the altar had to burn continually. So that was another specification in chapter 6. It talks about the fire having to burn continually. It was never to go out. It talks about, you know, bringing in wood in the morning to burn it and to keep the fire going. So the priest job, in essence, in the morning had to do with going and kindling the fire, bringing in new wood, bringing in fuel for the fire every morning. Okay? So again, priests had to burn wood on the altar every morning, lay the burnt offering in order, and the burnt fat of the peace offerings on the altar. So all of this had a specific order, and I think that's the one thing we're going to see as we keep going through it. Everything has an order and a place and a designation. Okay? Continuing, the next section regarded or talked about the meal offering. And it was one of Aaron's descendants who were to offer it. Okay, so it specifies that one of Aaron's descendants had to offer the meal offering. Handful or three middle fingerfuls. Okay, one of the things I noticed was that in the King James Version, it talks about a handful. Okay, but some of the Hebrew sources talk about three fingerfuls, and specifically that they would have the thumb and the pinky together like this. And so it was the three middle fingers that would then be taken, and it was that portion that was to be, you know, elevated and offered. So it's just interesting as you go through and look at the different versions. Some of the details tend to change a little bit. So it's nice to see that. Burn on the altar as a pleasing fragrance. This was in regards to, you know, so this handful of three middle fingerfuls, we're talking about wheat flour, and then they would take frankincense and have that in there, and then that was to be burnt on the altar, okay, for a fragrance, for a pleasing fragrance. And Aaron and his descendants were to eat of it, but it was specific that they were to eat of it, of this mixture, and it had to be unleavened. Okay, we're going to get into other offerings where it speaks about unleavened and leavened bread. But this one was specific in saying it had to be unleavened and that they had to eat it in a holy place. So it was to be eaten in a holy place at the court of the tent of meeting. So that was the only place where they could eat it. Okay. And this was given to them as a portion of God's own offerings made by fire to them. So this was a portion and given solely to them to be eaten, okay? So that was the meal offering. It was most holy, and it likened it to the sin and guilt offering, okay? And then the last offering that's mentioned within chapter 6 is the sin offering. The sin offering must be slaughtered in the same place as the burnt offering. So again, there's a likeness to the sin offering and the burnt offering. The priests fit to offer it may eat of it. So this was designating that they had to be in the right condition. Okay, so unless they were in a clean state and in ordinance fit to be able to partake of this ceremony, they couldn't do it. They couldn't eat of it. And there's other, it's interesting when you read through all of God's commands and all of his laws, how they cover one another. Okay, here it talks about the priest fit to offer it may eat of it. And then later on it talks about if you're unclean, you can't eat of it. And so it's, you know, everything covers so perfectly. Any blood that splashed on the garment that they were using to slaughter it had to be washed. Okay, and it had to be washed specifically in a sanctified place. The clay pot that was used to cook it had to be broken. Again, this is talking about the sin offerings. Any clay pot that was used had to be broken. But there's a difference in the copper pot, which was used in preparation. It was able to be scoured and rinsed off with water and then to be used. Okay, so there's, again, this had, you know, you may look at it today and think, well, maybe that had to do with germs and whatnot. You know, in the clay pot, it's harder to get out. In the copper pot, it wouldn't penetrate. But, you know, this is what's in the Torah portion. So it's for us to go back and look at the details. Every male among the priests may eat of it, and it is most holy. So again, this is the sin offering with one exception. A sin offering may not be eaten if its blood was brought into the tent of meeting for atonement. If it was used for that purpose, in other words, if it was brought in for the Yom Kippur, for the Day of Atonement, and the blood was used for that, then it could not be eaten. And it was then that it had to be burnt completely with fire. Okay, so again, these details are in here. what were to happen if, let's say, we skipped that last part, you know, and just read through most of it, but then skipped that last part? Well, we would assume that we could, you know, that the priest could eat the sin offerings. And I think that's kind of a detail I'm going to get into, but not yet. Now we're entering into chapter 7 with the guilt offerings. The guilt offering was to be slaughtered in the same place as the burnt offering. Okay, so again, it likens the sin and the burnt and the guilt offering all together as similar. Its blood is to be dashed against all sides of the altar. So each one of these offerings had specific rituals that were involved with it. So the guilt offering, you know, the blood was to be dashed on each side of the altar. Its fat was offered, the broad tail, and it lists the details on the specific fat. Now, what's interesting to note here is that the fat was always likened to the best portion, and it was the best portions that belonged to Yahweh. And so he was specific to them not to partake of these specific fats that belonged to him only. It was the broad tail, the fat of the entrails, the two kidneys, with the fat that's on them along the flanks, the lobe, the liver. You know, so again, all the best portion belonged to him. All must be burned by the priest. So there again, every single one of these, completely burned. All of the male priests may eat what remains in a holy place. So whatever was remaining of the guilt offering could be eaten by the male priest, but it had to be in a specific holy place. And again, the guilt offering was likened to the sin offering, and it specifically states that the same ritual pertains to both. Okay? Then we get into the peace offerings. This was offered as a thanksgiving offering, or a free will offering, if you will, presented with unleavened and leavened bread. And there were four specific types of breads, and the first was unleavened loaves mixed with oil. Then you had flat matzahs saturated with oil. You had loaves made of boiled flour mixed with oil. Each of these three were unleavened. And then the last one was leavened bread. Okay, so there were three portions of unleavened bread along with one of the leavened bread. And one of each one was to be presented as a gift to God. Okay? It was this that would belong to the priest, specifically who dashed the blood of the peace offering on the altar. Okay, so one of each of those loaves of bread belonged, was the offering to God and then belonged to the priest. He could partake of it. The flesh of the peace offering was to be eaten on the same day. It was a free will offering. And then what was left of it was to be eaten the next day. But, okay, again, this is another small detail that you could skip and miss, was that the flesh of the peace offering was to be eaten on the same day. But then it also stated that if it was a free will offering, then what's left of it could be eaten the next day. So, again, it's easy to miss those distinctions, those differences. And then again, it says, but on the third day, it was to be burned. And it goes on and talks about anyone who would take of it on the third day would be cut off from his kin, cut off from his people. Some of the details regarding the offerings, this was further in chapter 7. It talks about flesh that touches any unclean thing could not be eaten. Only those who are clean could partake of the offerings. Any who eat of God's sacrifices while in a state of uncleanliness would be cut off from their kin or their people. And I, one of the things I kind of looked at when it talked about being cut off from their kin, and I didn't go into this too much, but I also compared it to when Moses and, you know, others were gathered to their people. Okay, this was cut off from their people, where when they passed away or when they, you know, moved on to the next world, they were gathered to their people. So that, there's something there. I didn't really go into it too deeply, but I just found that interesting. Chapter 8 talks about the ordination of Aaron and his sons. Aaron and his sons were gathered along with the vestments, the anointing oil, the bull, the sin offering, the two rams, the basket of unleavened bread. The entire community was gathered. The Moses tells the people that this is what God commanded. So all of this has an order to it. Aaron and his sons were immersed in the mikvah. They were dressed in the vestments, anointed with the oil. The altar was anointed with the oil. Aaron's head was anointed with the oil. The sin offering ritual was completed. So lots of details, a lot of details in each of these. And so the questions that really we could come up with today is, number one, first of all, I didn't go into all the details of the ordination. And it's a beautiful ceremony. It really is for you to go back and read it and gain the insights into it. But one of the things that stuck out to me was the fact of, they took the blood of the second ram and put it on Aaron's right ear and his right thumb and his right toe. So the question is, why was blood put on Aaron's right ear lobe, right thumb, and right big toe? And another question, of course, after we've sat through and heard some of these details, is why are all these details pertinent to us today? Why do we need to know about the sacrifices and the offerings and all of this information? Why? I mean, it's very detailed, and the fact that it's in the Torah means that it belonged to the people. The people would be able to read and study it, right? So, think of the Shema in regards to Aaron. Hearing with the intent to do. See, Aaron and his children must hear the word, and this is represented by his right earlobe. So they have to not only hear it, but they must also act to do God's words. Okay? And that's represented with the hand. The hand represents work. And so the big thumb, the right thumb, represents, you know, the work that must be done upon hearing of the word. So then what of the foot? They must also walk in his ways. Okay, and this is represented by the right big toe of his foot, because the foot represents the path. The foot represents the walk. And we're to walk with God's ways. We're not only to listen to his word, but we're also to do his word, and we're also to walk in his word. Now, why are these details pertinent to us today? The details are there so we may be able to study, that we should know these details to help us recognize counterfeits. You see, the time will come when people will come and say, I am, you know, a representative of God. And we have to be able to recognize that they know everything that there is in the Word. We have to be able to scrutinize their actions and their doings. And if they come and start to offer sacrifices, we have to understand what the true sacrifices were. Not only what they were, how they were to be done, who was to do them, and in what place, and what things could be and couldn't be done. It's for us to understand, to know that God is one. Now, we may not always understand it, but there's an order in it. It's just like the fact of looking at his commandments. And when his commandments, the first one is, right, I am God who took you from Egypt. It's for us to understand that. If we can understand that he is our God, then everything else will make sense. But without that critical piece, then we can change things. And that's what happens throughout history. And so ends the Torah portion. I hope you gain something from it. And so be it. Hallelujah.